Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, May 8th, 2015. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Jonga Gandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The World Bank says Zimbabwe remains one of the most unfavorable destinations for investors.
In this case, the World Bank is more on point in terms of looking at the practical needs and realities in terms of wanting to open a business.
A video exclusively obtained by Studio 7 has again exposed ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration Ignatius Chombo, seen allegedly intimidating villagers in Urungwe West in a clear violation of some provisions of Zimbabwe's constitution.
We are facing a challenge of violence, intimidation from our members, because some of our posters right now are being removed. You can see the poster torn into pieces. Obviously, we suspect ZANU-PF youth who are doing such things.
And Agriculture Minister Joseph Made says the drought that has hit most parts of Zimbabwe, resulting in a 700,000-ton deficit of the staple maize meal, does not justify it being declared a national disaster.
No matter how much fast he wants to run, but he wants money. Because one way or the other, he has to do his checks and balances. Make sure that people in Zimbabwe receive the adequate food. Therefore, you can't say today I'm not going to declare it a disaster.
Economic analysts say the government must act on recommendations by the Zimbabwe Investment Authority to improve the country's investment environment so as to attract the much-needed foreign investment. This, as the World Bank says, Zimbabwe remains one of the most unfavorable destinations for investors, ranking it 171 out of 189 in its 2014 Ease of Doing Business Index. Zimbabwe Investment Authority Chief Executive Officer Richard Mbaiwa told the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Industry and Commerce this week that Zimbabwe needs to aggressively improve the overall business environment and investment climate to attract meaningful levels of investment. He added that in the region, the country was the least attractive for business. This despite a vote of confidence by the International Monetary Fund in March, which applauded the government for making progress in implementing their reform program and making progress in clarifying the indigenization laws. Economic commentator Masimba Kuchera says, indeed, the government has to restore the country's business image by first reforming the indigenization law.
Clearly, the World Bank is looking at the time it takes to open a business in Zimbabwe, even after the one-stop shop, which was attempted by the inclusive government. Apparently, it still takes a lot of time to open a business. The perceived corruption within the country, the uncertainty in terms of the political winds of the country, but also, most importantly, the indigenization regulation are some of the hindrances, and they are some of the key reasons why people don't want to bring their money here. Remember, in business, perception sometimes becomes reality, and Zimbabwe is clearly failing to fight the perception. They feel it's a perception that they have not been able to sort themselves out insofar as some of the issues that I mentioned are concerned.
How do you reconcile statements by the IMF saying that Zimbabwe has made some progress in clarifying the indigenization laws and the World Bank ranking Zimbabwe very lowly in terms of business environment favorability?
I think the changes that the IMF talks about are only a small fraction of the problem that that is local in this country, especially with regards to the way politics is being managed and to the interaction between politics and business. So In this case, the World Bank is more on point in terms of looking at the practical needs and realities in terms of wanting to open a business compared to the IMF. If it is true, of course, that there has been some movement, we'll certainly then be able to see it after a few months. But it's very difficult to restore business confidence, especially when those who destroyed the confidence are still the ones in charge.
That was economic commentator Masimba Kuchera speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
This is Studio 7 for Zimbabwe, live from Washington, D.C. A video exclusively obtained by Studio 7 has again exposed ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration Ignatius Chombo intimidating villagers in Urungwe West in a clear violation of Section 67 of the Constitution, which guarantees the electorate freedom to form, join and participate in the activities of a political party of their choice. Reporter Blessing Zulu has more.
Violence and intimidation is escalating in most of the 16 constituencies ahead of the June 10th parliamentary by-elections. The epicenter of the violence remains Urungwe West constituency, where expelled ZANU-PF lawmaker Temba Muliswa is battling it out with the ruling ZANU-PF party Sir Keith Gujam. Urungwe West villagers told Studio 7 that state security agents, retired army members and ZANU-PF youths have been deployed in the constituency and are terrorizing them. Campaigning in the volatile constituency, Chombo is recorded telling villagers that their headmen will write down their names and head them to the polling stations. For years, opposition parties have been complaining about this practice without evidence. But Chombo unwittingly exposed the strategy.
We are going to give a book to every headman in this constituency to write down the names of all people in his ward on election day. The headman must lead his people to the polling stations and ensure that everyone votes and their names are ticked.
Reacting to the intimidation, the Zimbabwe Election Support Network called upon the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to investigate the reported incidents of intimidation and abuse of traditional leaders in order to create an environment that will lead to the holding of free, fair and credible by-elections in the constituency. In another statement, the Zimbabwe Peace Project, or ZPP, confirmed that members of the Central Intelligence Organization, or CIO, have been deployed in most schools in Urungwe West and are threatening to abduct those who are supporting Muliswa. ZPP has also called on ZEC and the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission to intervene. Reached for comment, ZEC chairperson Rita Makarau told Studio 7 that she was not in the office and will be prepared to respond next week. Election Resource Center Director Tawanda Chimini says reports of violence are a cause for serious concern.
We have been tracking all by-elections since the harmonized elections in 2013. And in all our reporting as Election Resource Centers, we've indicated that we remain very worried about the failure by political parties in Zimbabwe to respond to what observers have often said are incidences of malpractice that then render our election processes unfree, unfair and not credible. So it is quite disturbing but not surprising for us to be hearing the reports that have been emanating out of Urungwe West.
In Harare, some small opposition parties are also complaining about the intimidation and violence allegedly caused by ZANU-PF. Media and liaison officer Leonard Kone of the Progressive Democratic Party says ZANU-PF youths are disrupting their campaigns.
We are facing a challenge of violence, intimidation from our members because some of our posters right now are being removed, and you can see the posts are torn into pieces. Obviously, we suspect the ZANU-PF youth who are doing such things. Because the moment we put your poster, you see a ZANU-PF poster on top of our poster.
ZANU-PF candidate for Urungwe West, Guza, refused to comment, saying he is not aware of any radio station known as Studio 7. Following reports of alleged violence, the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission is believed to have dispatched a high-powered delegation to Urunga West today to investigate reports of violence. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington, D.C.
Agriculture Minister Joseph Made says the drought that has hit most parts of Zimbabwe, resulting in a 700,000-ton deficit of the staple maize, does not justify it being declared a national disaster. The country needs about 1.4 million tons of maize per year. Made was responding to Musigabanu legislator Prosper Mutseyami of the MDCT, who wanted to know if the government was going to declare the drought a national disaster. Already, families in some parts of the country that are hardest hit, especially Matabeleland, Maswingo and Manicaland, are going hungry before the peak food deficit period that starts around June. In 2000, Made took a helicopter ride around the country and on that basis declared that the country was going to enjoy a bumper harvest, but it turned out to be one of the worst drought years since independence. Bulawayo Central MP Dorcas Sibanda, who is an MDCT member and also sits on the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Finance, tells Studio 7 Made is making a mistake in not declaring the drought a disaster.
Giving an individual or another person food is not a favor, but it is a must that a person should get food, should get water, should get shelter. So Minister Made can't run away from that. No matter how much fast he wants to run, but he won't manage. Because one way or the other, he has to do his checks and balances. Make sure that people in Zimbabwe have received adequate food. Therefore, he can't say today I'm not going to declare it a disaster or it's too early to declare it a disaster. If he has got enough from his field, then we'll say he's like he has got something, but it doesn't mean the whole country will be fed from his field. Somehow, one way or the other, he just has to declare a national disaster. And by so doing, again, it's the government's duty to make sure that the government runs around and feeds its people. You can't say you are governing people when you don't have an idea what to do next when such incidents happen. It is the government's prerogative to make sure that they feed the people of the nation. They should lead people who are adequately fed.
That was Dorcas Banda, the Bulawayo Central legislator, who also sits on the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Finance. She spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
Meanwhile, Minister Made says the government will not distribute free farming equipment and inputs after it secured loans totaling almost $300 million to boost agricultural production in the country. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
Briefing senators in the Peace and Security Thematic Committee on the status of agriculture and food security in Zimbabwe, Minister Made said government had secured loans from Brazil, India and South Korea.
There will be no free equipment that will be given anymore. So I just want to emphasize that to the committee, and I also take advantage of the media so that everybody will know that there will be no equipment that will be given for free. We have to pay for this equipment because this is a loan facility. Our friends cannot continue giving us loans that we do not pay.
Made said government cannot continue to give farmers agricultural equipment and inputs for free, as these were loans that had to be repaid. Government secured $98 million from Brazil under the Food for Africa program, which is designed to benefit smallholder farmers. The $60 million and $100 million loans from India and South Korea would be utilized by A2 farmers. Made said the funds from the two countries would go towards irrigation and mechanization. Government has, over the last couple of years, dished out farming equipment and agricultural inputs for free, and most of it was abused as the farmers had no obligation to pay back. Agriculture has remained subdued over the years Despite the distribution of these inputs, at the moment, the country has a grain deficit of 700,000 metric tons, a situation that will force Zimbabwe to import it from neighboring nations. Economic commentator Masimba Kuchera commended the move by the government, saying only serious farmers must benefit under the new schemes.
It's a good stance. I think agriculture, we have seen, is a very important industry for Zimbabwe. A lot of our economy is agro-based.
Made said only inputs distributed under the Presidential Farming Input Scheme would remain free. Meanwhile, Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mudenda told diplomats and United Nations officials that he was last month denied a visa to America for meetings with the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. He said he was supposed to travel to the U.S. from the 12th to the 18th of April with Finance Portfolio Committee Chairman David Chafika, but they were both denied visas as America indicated that they were on the targeted sanctions list. Mudenda said they had been invited to the United States by the Inter-Parliamentary Union for a meeting of speakers of parliament to discuss poverty reduction. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
Harare Council starts building a statue of the late Vice President Joshua Mqabuko Nkomo.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The U.S. military has increased the security at bases across the country a day after the FBI expressed the concern that Islamist militants could target troops or police officers.
The U.S. Justice Department will investigate possible civil rights violations by the Baltimore Police Department following riots triggered by the death of a black man in police custody.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry met with French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius Friday before participating in a ceremony marking the 70th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe.
And the United Nations says it has received only $22 million of the $415 million it says it needs for the emergency response to the 7.8 magnitude Nepal earthquake.
British Prime Minister David Cameron won another five-year term as his party surged to an outright majority of seats in Parliament in Thursday's election, far more than opinion polls had predicted. It was a stunning victory for Cameron and his Conservative Party as it became the first British ruling party in decades to increase its seats in Parliament in an election. Cameron went to Buckingham Palace today to formally receive the mandate from Queen Elizabeth to form the next government. Equally stunning was the decline of Cameron's coalition partner for the last 5 years, the Liberal Democratic Party, which lost nearly 50 seats and will have fewer than 10. The party leader and Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg resigned Thursday morning. The leader of the main opposition Labour Party, Ed Miliband, also resigned after the party won fewer seats than it had 5 years ago, well short of pollsters' predictions of a dead heat between Labour and the Conservatives. ZANU-PF's UK chairperson Nick Mangwana says there's no reason for Zimbabweans to panic over the Conservative Party's win, as the Conservative Party is not hostile to the Southern African nation.
The Conservatives' attitude towards Zimbabwe has been, let me say, cordial. They haven't been actively attacking Zimbabwe. I don't think David Cameron has uttered the word Zimbabwe for the last 5 years, which is better, because it's better to be left alone to rule yourselves, because that's what costs sovereignty, compared to Labour's hostility, which was active attack, active hostility, instigation of sanctions, incitement of other countries to have a very hostile attitude towards Zimbabwe. So in that regard, if they keep the same narrative they've been keeping on Zimbabwe, it's okay for us. Because as you know, the relaxing of sanctions against our country were instituted by the Conservatives since they came in. And the sanctions themselves, they were instigated by Labour. So if the foreign policy remains the same, then we are comfortable with the new setup.
We know that the Conservatives have got issues with the immigration, you know, or immigrants. Is that not going to have some kind of negative impact on people that are seeking some kind of relief to stay in London?
Domestic policy, the British domestic policy, obviously, is down to them. I'm not sure that there are too many Zimbabweans who will be affected by any attitude change regarding the immigration policy, because the biggest bulk of Zimbabweans that came at one time was in 1992. That's when the visa regime was put on Zimbabwe. So because of that, we didn't end up with droves of people coming since then. So we are basically saying that the people have been in this country for the very least 12 years. So most of those people that are here, they've got their stay sorted. So they shouldn't be too affected. Obviously, there will be one or two people who will be affected by any change in the immigration practice and policy, but quite a minority.
That was ZANU-PF's UK chairperson Nick Mangwana speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from London.
But Zimbabwean Joshua Chigwangwa, who contested and lost in the council elections under the Labour Party, says some Zimbabweans living in Britain may be scared about the Conservative Party's stunning win. He says immigration issues that affect a lot of Africans and other ethnic groups are part of the Conservative Party's political agenda.
A lot of people this time around were really rallying behind the Labour Party is because most of the leadership within the Labour Party either children of immigrants or immigrants themselves. Like the leader of the Labour Party is an offspring of an immigrant, and we have also a lot of other people in high positions who are in a similar position, like Chuka Amuna and Keith Vass and all. So there was a situation where people had that notion that the policies we have put in place would, to a certain degree, accommodate the plight of migrants as well.
Now, are there any fears that the Conservative Party will start to make maybe a clamping down on immigrants after this win?
Obviously, fears are there. If you have been following the election itself, immigration kept coming up. You know that we are having a problem with people dying in the Pacific Ocean, trying to get to Europe from Libya and all. So definitely immigration is a topical issue, not only for the UK, but for the EU countries, which are also affected by the thousands of migrants who are dying in the sea.
That was Joshua Chigwangwa, who contested the British elections under the Labour Party, speaking with Studio 7 from London.
Cameron says he will form a new government after his Conservative Party secured a majority in Thursday's parliamentary vote, defying pre-election opinion polls that predicted a razor-thin outcome. His Conservative Party will take more than 326 of the 650 seats up for grabs in the House of Commons.
Direct from Washington.
The Harare City Council says it has resumed plans to build the statue of the later Vice President Joshua Mkabuko Nkomo at Africa Unity Square to honor the later former ZAPU president after previous attempts failed. The statue was initially meant to be erected at Karigamombe Building in Harare, but the move was blocked by the High Court following an outcry that the site had negative political connotations and therefore an insult to the Nkomo family and people from Matabeleland. Another attempt to erect the statue along Julius Nyerere Street in Harare in 2010 hit a snag. In Bulawayo, the statue was finally erected in 2013. Southerton Councillor Peter Moyo, who seconded the motion, tells Studio 7's Standegile Mhlanga the council is aiming to complete the project in the next 2 months.
Dr. Joshua Nkomo was above tribalism. He was above regionalism. He was above racism. So he was an African icon, just like Nelson Mandela. Nobody objected, and some council officials were of the view that that it should go to the Environment and Management Committee for discussion.
What is the next step for the council, and what are your timelines for this project?
We expect the Environment and Management Committee in their next meeting to deliberate on this issue. The last Thursday of this month, we are going to endorse it as the full council because we mooted the idea, so I don't see anyone reversing it. After that, we'll give the town clerk just a month to make sure that the stage is there, whether the government is going to endorse it or not. It's not our baby, but actually what we've done is to honor our late vice president, who was the father of Zimbabwe. He was the president of all people. He's the founder of the nationalism in Zimbabwe. He removed everybody from colonialism. He was the pillar of strength to most of the youth. He was the darling to everybody. He could not even utter nonsense like what we are hearing nowadays. Some other people insulting other regions or other tribes. He was just above that. And I think everybody concurs with me.
That was Southerton Councillor Peter Moyo, who is also MDCT Chief Whip in the Harare City Council, on the line with Studio 7 from Harare.
And in our sports segment, the Zimbabwe Castor Lager Premier Soccer League gets into week 9 this weekend, with men being separated from boys as competition for the title intensifies. Our reporter Michael Kariati reports from Harare.
The gap between the two title contenders and the pretenders is widening as leaders Kicking In are now 6 points adrift of fourth place Blauwe Giants Highlanders as the league reaches its ninth gap. Even defending champion Dynamos are falling behind as they are now 5 points behind the leaders, following two consecutive defeats to Kicking In at lightweight Wawa Prison. The Gamecocks have the chance to extend their lead at the top of the table when they travel to Harare to play and settle the PC Kariba, who yesterday fired coach Saul Chaminuka. The game at Bandura Stadium will see Oliver Mataba in charge of Katuruturu for the third time, and the team is also in danger of following in the heels of the Harare City, who had a good run in their maiden season in 2013, but ended up fighting relegation the following year. Ironically, Harare City fired coach Big Boy Mawiwi in the same way the PC Kariba fired Chaminuka just after a few games into the season.
I have been frustrated. I just received the note which talks about the two
around. That's
the
team as well.
I
didn't
have to mention the reason why I
have been
frustrated.
That's my position. Kicking In, who are on 19 points from 8 games, are now on a roll, and coach Joe Antipas reckons he has built a strong team for the championship this season.
As coaches, we've got objectives, but what I'd like to say is that what we'll do, we'll take it game by game, see how far we can get.
Second place Triangle have the chance to keep pace with the leaders, as they are expected to steamroll over Wawa Prison. Although the Prison Warriors yesterday shocked the football fraternity with a 1-0 win over Dynamos, they are unlikely to put up a strong challenge at Tibo Stadium, where the Sugar Sugar Boys rarely lose games. The home team supporters will be there to give their team all the support it needs.
Sugar! Sugar, sugar!
Triangle trail Kicking In by 2 points. Dynamos, however, have the toughest of tasks again, as they host Norman Mapesa's Rejuvenated FC Platinum at Rufaro Stadium Sunday. Another loss will be bad for Dynamo's reputation, as they will continue to lose grip on the title they've won in the past 4 years. More importantly, it will widen the rift between coach Desmond Gora and the team's impatient fans, who have always been against his appointment.
Thanks, Michael. And remember, Studio 7, stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about an Afrobarometer report showing that President Mugabe is very popular in Zimbabwe.
And now to recap today's top stories.
The World Bank says Zimbabwe remains one of the most unfavorable destinations for investors.
A video exclusively obtained by Studio 7 has again exposed the ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration Ignatius Chombo, seen allegedly intimidating villagers in Hurungwe.
That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Jonga Kande.